ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This is part two with Coach Jeff from Northern Utah United. Now, as we start this episode, we kind of leave off where we left off last week, where I abruptly ended on you. But listen to what he has to say. And there is a interview I'm going to attach to the end of this episode so you guys can hear more about why I wanted him on here. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
At the older ages where winning can matter more, I'm not going to say it's the most important thing, but it can matter more, meaning that the players have grown. In my opinion, it's not a club problem at that stage, it's a league problem. The leagues are promoting certain results.
Yes.
Right? And the easiest way for the adults to manage those leagues is through team arrangements, right? And then having this fluidity that you're going to trust the club or the teams that they're going to move the players up and down. The leagues have to overhaul what their priorities are. In our state, we'll have one club with three teams in the Premier Division. If you go to Europe and you watch Barcelona, Barcelona has their A team that plays in the in La Liga, right? They have a B team that plays in League One. When they win League One, the team doesn't get promoted to play against the A team, their players get promoted to play and they remain in the division. So one example of a quick fix is your club can only have one team at any level, which now sends the talent to go to multiple top level teams, right? Whereas a lot
Right.
of clubs will hoard all the talent and do what they want with them because there's no competition anymore because they've taken all the competition away. So I don't blame the clubs. That's the deck that they're being dealt. I blame the league setup that does not provide an environment that makes it about individual development. Back to my community, we're isolated from the rest of Utah. We have a canyon that's and a gap between the next major city, which is 40, 50 miles away. So what I love about where we live, not only is it a great place to raise my kids, but what I love about where we live is that there is hope that we can get it right here. Because we're isolated, we don't have to fight amongst these big other clubs. There are other clubs in the community. We respect them. We try to include them with decision makings. We run our own gaming league. In fact, that's how our club was established. It was originally a rec league with a comp league that prepared you for state level soccer. Well, over 30, 40 years of that existing, we've evolved into a club. Where I see the benefit in our community is if go back to if everyone was in the same club, you could create an intra-club league where you can now moderate the experience. You can navigate the player's experience by moving them up and down in these different gaming environments. I won't go into detail on that, but the idea would be, are we thinking outside the box on how to take this from a team experience and make it about the individual's experience? And so I do understand the smaller, the better, because then you can influence. It's easier to influence a smaller group of people. But culture doesn't change in your community if we're all fighting against each other, right? And our goal is, as our name is to unite everybody. We want everyone to be un underneath the united name, with the exception of that we lose a lot of the five. I think someone referenced the 5% in one of your podcasts. There's 5% that are just pure alpha. All they want to do is win. We're okay with losing those kids. We would prefer to keep them here because we're trying to create the right environment for them to grow, and hopefully we would advance them to another level team. We wouldn't use them for that team that they're or that age group that they're waxing. We would try to advance them as needed for the individual. The hope would be, though, that we could manage the players and experience on a consistent schedule, have fluidity. Coaches are collaborating and discussing levels of players. We actually identify players at four different levels in with amongst their peers. We publish it. The parents all know where their kids sit. Everyone thought we were crazy. I get so many parents thanking us because what it does is, and this kind of leads into one of the things I think you wanted to talk to me about was what it does is it opens the door for the parents to ask you, why is my kid evaluated like this compared to this person? And what we've had in the history is the parent, or sorry, the coach is in charge of the kids. And if you go ask the parent, or if you go, the parent goes and asks the coach a question, their kid gets punished for you asking questions. That is such a dinosaur approach to developing kids. As coaches, we should be ex an extension of the parents helping raising them, right? The old phrase, it takes a tribe. We should be implementing things to help the parents help parent their kids to become good adults. And having clarity on what the expectations are for the kids, the parents, the coaches, having clarity on what your values and your principles are, knowing your why. Why is my kid not starting? Why is my kid playing right back instead of forward? I've got this fantastic player right now that just scores so many goals. She's just a raw athletic beast, and she loves soccer. She starts every game at center back or right back. every single game. Her parents haven't, we have open dialogue about it all the time. It's too easy for her to run with a ball and kick into a big white box. I'm doing her a disservice by letting her just continue to feel successful at what's easy, right? So now when her parents come and say, hey, why is my kid, she's a leading goal scorer, why is she playing right back? Well, she's got to learn how to take players on at some point in time, not just run past them. Soccer is not a run past them sport, unless you're Holland, right? It just doesn't exist. Everyone else has to know how to beat a player one-on-one. At the end of the day, I'm putting your daughter in an environment where she has to do multiple one-on-ones for 40 minutes. That's going to benefit her when it's harder later.
Right.
And I know my why, right? And so the system where we organize or we share our evaluation of the player amongst their peers, it sounds super controversial, right? It sounds like, oh, you're putting them against each other. No, we're giving you an opportunity to know what the coach is thinking, and we're giving you an opportunity for ask the coach what they're thinking without your kid being punished. We're inviting us to be a family helping your child be raised. And at the end of the day, our goal is to create good human beings that give back in our own community. The icing on the cake is when you're at the indoor center and you're seeing kids you coached 10, 12, 15 years ago, and they're still balling out at 25, 30, 35 years old, and have kids sitting on the sidelines watching their parents play because you instilled a passion for it. And obviously, they're good citizens in the community as a byproduct.
Right.
That's the end game. If they end up being professionals, good on them. They did the extra. And we just happen to facilitate the environment for them.
That is the culture that I think is missing here in the United States. And like I think you're like you said, you're in a unique circumstance because Cache Valley is by itself. I don't know if many people if most people know that like it is truly in a valley, and there's only so much space for everyone, and you can create that soccer community. And I think in a city like DFW, we have the chance. We need to centralize, like every city has their own youth soccer organization. I'm starting to see the youth soccer organizations that are affiliated with the cities now expanding to more like the club level mentality and being able to compete at a higher level. The problem is they go play against these big clubs, and coaches take down names and numbers and go meet the parents and try to recruit, which I get it. It's like you want the next best thing. And I was talking to a coach, Richard, and with Triumph FC, and that's what the one thing he talked about. It is parents want their kids to be playing with such and such clubs. And it goes back to what I've said multiple times. It's that Gucci mentality. And he talked about like a parent would put the MLS club sign in their front yard, but not their other kid's Triumph sign in the yard. And he goes, the end goal, it should be at the MLS club for their player, but you should be proud in the club that your kid's being developed and trained in now. And I think that is the one thing missing here is that there's no true recognition for the development of players. I can tell you that some players played for a certain coach here that play on a national level, and he gets no credit for developing this player. Only the last club or the last two clubs that
Right.
worked with her get the credit. And I joked recently with a coach, like, we need to have a more of a European style model here. And as horrible as it says, that our players are commodities, and either you pay a fee to take that player from the club or to show or give them the true recognition so they can continue developing players that you can take with you. And I think that's what's missing. And from the sounds of it, you guys have more of the European model there because you guys are isolated. You guys, like you said, a community can root for you guys and know that it's you. And yeah, you just don't have that. I mean, the $150,000.
I want to be super clear. We have the potential. We're not there yet.
No, right. I
But
mean,
we have the potential with, and man, we've got great coaches. We've got great families. We've got a great culture. It just isn't, it's not that deep yet. We haven't had enough time to really put a Catalan influence in Cache Valley. We don't have that culture yet. But to the credit of the idea of what you're talking about with your city team becoming club teams, there's a ton of value in that. There's some days I wish that the cities would allow clubs to be connected, because then you could really change the culture with helping improve best practices in their rec programs, right? It's not just a facilitator anymore. It's where you put 10 kids on a field and they go run around for an hour. There's actually some like discussion of why are we playing 5v5? Or right now one of the questions I have right now is our youngest U9s playing in our indoor rec league is playing 77, but the older age groups are playing 66. The answer to them is, well, they're smaller, so they take up less space. I'm like, well, not when they're running in a herd, right?
Right.
So those things are kind of on the wish list. Is, man, if you could get those rec programs to be part of your club, that's the ideal situation. If I was that club, and I have this opportunity here, the barrier's hard like everywhere else, but in an idea, I should say, in an ideal world, the city rec leagues would value their role in the players' development and latch on to the club philosophy in their community. It's really unlikely, but in an ideal world, on the idea of player recruiting, I've kind of gotten over it, meaning that it just is part of the game. But I will say that one of the most unethical things in our game right now is false promises, false expectations, and feasting on the naivety of the uninformed or unexperienced parent. That is where it all falls apart for me, like from a in the conversation of why players leave to go somewhere else. One, your current team or club isn't doing a good enough job of explaining your why, for you to make a decision on whether you want to be there in the first place. You should be joining a club or a team because they are clear about what their why is, right? So when someone comes to poach your kid, you can tell that person why you like this and can say, can you offer me the same thing? These are the things we like about our current experience. And what usually happens is that the poacher will likely come in, tell you what you want to hear. Your kid's great. We've got this team for them. It's at this level. They win all these games. They win all these tournaments. They don't tell you that you're going to be on the bottom end of the roster sitting on the bench because the other kids are already established players winning games, right? Or we're going to bring you in and put you on the second team and not give you the attention that you were getting on that team you were already on, right? So there's a lot of dynamics where it really comes down to, people taking advantage of those that are not informed of why they're currently playing soccer, where they're at.
I agree. I think when you're talking about it from that perspective, I think parents have to self-educate. I think everyone gets caught up in the glitz and the glam. And like we walked into the season, this team that my son is on is a newly established team. Like we wrote off this whole first season knowing that the odds of them coming out and having a winning record was very slim in their season. And they've played in tournaments and been very successful and unsuccessful in some, but kids are kids, and it comes back to where the kids are developing. But if you would look at them when they first played together to where they're playing together and the individual level of law of these players, they have grown as a team and they've grown as individuals, which gives credit to the coaching staff that's around these players. And I think parents have to see that. It is being I feel like we've been kind of spoiled in our family because we joined this team, but when we joined this team we get access to about five other coaches. It's not just one coach, it is five other coaches that can step in at any moment and coach these boys as if it they're their own team, because they'll run a practice with them, they'll do stuff, and that's how it's. I joked when Anthony took his club and merged with Solar, it was he still is a club with inside of a club and running it like his own club,
Right.
and he's running it like a professional club. He has his expectations, and if they aren't getting it, he goes gets he yells at them and tells them like, you should be able to get this. Go get your water, and we'll come back and discuss it again, and try to figure out why we're not getting it, or break it down so it's simpler. Then he'll, like you said, the coaches will manipulate the practice to make it more of how they want it, and you don't get that. And I feel like as a parent, you get told all these great things, and this is why we as parents, we will go watch a coach before we even approach the coach. We'll go watch their, find out where they're practicing, watch them from the sidelines. We will go watch how they coach during games and not tell them that we're there. And then when we go actually try out for the team, we'll talk about a game that we were at with them and ask them, is this how you normally do things? And it, I think it kind of takes a coach back when you actually we as parents invest into our kids. And I think if parents take the approach, I'm going to give credit to Dennis, as parents take the approach with schooling, as they do with their sports, I think the community will flourish even faster than even what you're doing up in Cache Valley will flourish, not in 10 years, it might flourish in 2 years, because parents are actually giving it enough attention like they do their school grades, and
Yeah,
not
they're
just,
getting there.
yes.
They're getting there.
And I think education's key.
I still struggled when parents questioned me, right? That's a human, like, all right, how do I really explain what I think about their child? But be honest with them at the same time, right? Because I think what attracted you to me was a previous podcast where I said coaches are the most well-intended liars on the face of the earth.
Yes.
And one of the hardships we have is as coaches, we don't want to be put in a position where we're questioned because we might offend them. We might make them want to go somewhere else. We might lose the player. We might lose trust. They might not see eye to eye. But if you start off that way, meaning that you're clear on what your expectations are and you're communicating, sometimes even over communicating, especially in early stages of gathering of parents along with their kids. The dialogue, I had a parent call me up and say, hey, I don't want you to think that we are mad at you or unhappy with you. We just disagree with your assessment of our daughter. And we had a dialogue, and it was at the end, thank you. One, thank you for telling me what you think. And two, tell me what, thank you for what we think. Let's communicate. Let's continue to communicate and make sure our kid's in the right place. And it was a we conversation. The parent called me after a couple text messages to make sure that there wasn't friction. And I was like, dude, you know that this is about your daughter. I don't, my ego's not there, but I'm not going to also lie to you and tell you that your kid is ready for this, in my opinion. But I'm also going to listen to your opinion and go, all right, where's the medium? Where do we put him in an environment where they want a harder environment. Let's put it that way. Not a better team, nothing like that. They think that they should be in a harder environment. I said, look, I'm not going to make the change. I'm going to keep them where they're at. But your daughter will be the first person when a player is missing from the other team. We're talking about an indoor season right now, which is rosters, it's the Wild West.
Yes.
When a player is missing, she'll be the first one to get called up. And then I really want us to observe how she does in that environment. And if I'm wrong, awesome. Because that means she's ready for that next level. If I'm right, we need to recognize that I'm right. Right? But we both can't be stubborn on our opinion. We have to respect each other's opinion and then find ways to find common ground to explore exposing them for the right reasons. I don't want to bring her up and be like, see, I told you, she's not ready. That's the last thing I want to do. I want her to come up and be like, yeah, parents, you were right. Your assessment was right. She hung with them. We need to keep pushing her. We'll put her in this environment. You have the ability and the ambition. Let's change the environment or improve the environment is maybe a better way to say it. But at the same time, if she's getting dragged around the field and she's out of place, let's acknowledge that and put her in the right place, knowing that she can have that moment again later.
And I think parents have, as a parent, and this is something it's been hard for me, is that when my son was 5 and 6, he was a phenomenal player. I mean, I had coaches telling me left and right that how great he was. And then as he slowly got older, yeah, it is the up and down. I call it the tornado squiggly line. And it is players go up and down. During tryouts last year, my son was struggling. And I'm like, what a great time to be struggling during tryout season, because he's playing a year up. He's what we call academy here is moving to a U11 team. And U11 is now select, and you sign a year-long contract where in the academy, you can go play on 5 different teams if you want, and no one can say a word to you. And I think we as parents have to put our ego aside. And so we actually took him and had him evaluated by a coach we've never met, just a recommendation by a local player that we know. He goes, I have a coaching friend. He'll give an evaluation. And he goes, he told us, like, he could play with 12s. He's technically there, but his size, he's not. He needs to go play a year younger and with 2012s. Let me rephrase that, with 2012s and go play with 2013. He should be playing either with a top team at 2014, which is his age, or a top team at 2013. But he should not be playing any higher up because he's just going to get clobbered. And it's like, that's all we wanted to know, where we should place him,
right,
and give us recommendations. Because at the end of the day, we only want what's best for Landon. And I think parents, like we've talked about, it's like we see it one way, you see it another way, and there has to be something in the middle. And I'm very heavily involved in soccer, and I have my opinion of my son and where he should be, and it may not be right. But at the end of the day, it's taking that step back and listening to a third party giving us the feedback, because we need a reality check as parents, because I feel like a lot of kids are not, parents are well-intended liars too with their kids and promoting their kids. And sometimes their kids don't hold up to the mustard, so to speak.
Right. The other thing on that is that we tend to spoil those kids that are early developers. And then when it becomes difficult at 13, 14, 15 years old, they're not resilient enough to manage not being the top scorer or the best player or the kid that stands out when everyone kind of evens out with them. The Belgium director, I always mess his name up, we'll just say Chris Van. He has an analogy with bananas that I use frequently, right?
Yes.
We tend to spoil the bananas that bloom early. And then we tend to throw away the green bananas before they ever have a chance to mature. That is really, really a big lesson, is we focus on your son so much that we neglect the green bananas that haven't had a chance, while giving your son way too much praise and accolades. So when it evens out, one, the green bananas aren't there to support your son later because they've quit, because they don't enjoy it and they're not getting the right attention. And then the yellow banana gets there, and the ones that still survive and they join up with, they're just as good as, because as we get to 13, 14, 15 years old, we tend to start lumping like-leveled players together more efficiently.
Right.
And now that kid has that problem. And I will even say at the college level, those kids that were studs on their club team at 16, 17, 18, and 19, and were never challenged to do more, meaning that they were coming off the bench because they were playing on a higher team, fighting for a position, playing out of position. When they go to a four-year college and there's a senior there, a junior there, and a sophomore there taking your spot, they tend not to handle that first year or two very well because they're used to being the rock star on their team. They haven't gotten a reality check that they're in this massive pool, nationwide, statewide, localwide, that can be pretty harsh if you take yourself out of the comfort zone.
I think that's the problem, is we don't like this is what we tell every coach. We don't want our son to be the top player on the team because he has nothing to strive for. He can be in the top pool, And I feel like a good team will have some really great players, but they also have some, those really great players have their own weaknesses. And it's like where my son fits into that equation is, does he balance out that other player? And does that other player push him where their his weaknesses? And I feel parents, I can't say all parents, but I feel like a lot of parents want their kid to be the top player on a team. And here I'm saying, like, I want my kid in the middle of the pack. I want him to have to fight for every inch of that the pitch and every minute of time that he's on the pitch. And if he's the top kid, he takes it easy. Like he gets lackadaisical. Like he could takes it easy. And you have to find a coach that can motivate that when they're to that level.
The BYU basketball coach just had a quote a week or two ago that I thought that was really relevant to this. He said, "We tend
Yes.
to celebrate achievement, and therefore we never allow our players to become." And it was really impactful to me. Is like we give these all these accolades about how great they are. In the meantime, we're making sure that there's no barriers so they can continue to get those accolades. And therefore, they're never put in a pressure cooker or an uncomfortable environment to become a better version of what they already are. And I just thought that was super important to recognize we've got to give our kids an opportunity to become, which means that there always has to be another level of challenge for them. And there also has to be a place where when they're struggling that they can go back and build their confidence up.
I think that's the thing is we as parents, especially here in the United States, don't like our kids to feel pain or failure. And the only successful people you hear about, I mean, I'm not going to use basketball because that's where a lot of them are. Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan are two of my favorite examples. I mean, there's more to Michael Jordan just being cut from his team. I mean, it was a size thing, but he also had to get better at his game. It was his motivation to be better. Kobe Bryant would go shoot 3,000 shots before he started his day. You listen to some of the stories about him. Like he would go ride his bike or walk to school before school starts, an hour, 2 hours before school starts, get permission to go in and go shoot hoops by himself, unless someone else wanted to join him. It wasn't because mom and dad, but it allowed him to motivate himself. And he talked about like, if I'm ahead of the game, if I start putting the work in now, by the time I'm at the same level as everyone else, I'm going to be farther ahead of them. And I think that was a great analogy with him. And Michael Jordan has the other one. He goes, I failed 9,000. What was it? He failed. He gives this long quote of how many times he's missed shots and was given the opportunity to make the final shot to win a game, and he failed. And it was those moments that made him better. And I think it goes right along with your quote that you just gave us. It's what can they become? I think you're right. I think he's right there. I think it's a matter of finding those opportunities.
It comes back to making sure we have an environment for those players to go up and down. And again, I bring back our, I think it's just our terminology I've tried to share with others, but it's really, in my opinion, what makes our club different or potentially different is the individual vertical integration. We really want to make sure that there's a slide for the player to gravitate towards based off of their ambitions and abilities. I think that we need to get out of this old model of I've been with this team forever, and so I can't branch out of there. I do think that that has a the right place, but if you're an ambitious kid, you shouldn't be held back. I call this the Curtis Douglas story when I do a coaching education course. Curtis Douglas and I were best friends. We went to the same church together. We played on all the same AYSO teams together. We played after school. We drove back and forth from school or walked back and forth, everything. And then fourth grade hit, and Curtis was no longer in my class. And I asked why. And Curtis was academically accelerating. And so his mom put him in a more challenging environment for him. He didn't get held back because I was the average student. and we were best friends, and our parents were best friends. She made a decision based off of their needs and what the parent recognizes that, oh, there's another place where my kid can be further challenged. Why don't we do that when our job is as coaches is educators? If our kids are graduating, if our kids are Doogie Howsers, why are they not being put in an environment? And a large time it's because, well, these were our friends, or this is the coach I've always had, or we've got to start doing better about helping our kids manage the experience. Now, whether they accept our direction for them or not, that doesn't matter. We have to advise the kid and the player on what we think is best. Current example, we've got a girl that is just a beast on one of our high school age level teams. And she is doing basketball this year for the first time. I think she's done it a little recreationally, right? But she's playing basketball. Well, she has ankle injuries and she has knee injuries and she doesn't have any time to recover. And she's on the radar of D1 schools for soccer. And we, meaning a colleague of mine that came and watched her, that is high level, looked at her parents and said, look, she's a D1 soccer player. She needs to focus on being a D1 soccer player. It's okay that she plays basketball recreationally and goes and does some fun things, but she's going to lose out on minutes with the ball because she's doing basketball. It's not that she's doing basketball, it's that she's losing time with soccer, which we are under the impression that this is her priority. They ignored us. I don't hold that against the parents. I don't hold that against the kid. I treat her the same exact way, no matter what. But I felt responsible for telling them how I felt. They can think I'm crazy. They can consider themselves, we value being a four-star athlete or a four-letter athlete at high school, and that's what we value. Good for you. I'm
Right.
just telling you as a soccer person that if your daughter wants to reach or your son wants to reach the potential, these are pitfalls that we've seen over the last few decades.
Right.
But I'm also not going to shame you. What I told I have a group of you 11 girls. As I basically said, you should be, if you want to reach your potential, you should be touching the ball formally, informally, 10 to 20 hours a week. That's to reach your potential. That's a lot for an 11-year-old, but it's honest. And I said, I just want you to know that I'm never going to be upset at you if you don't touch a ball. But there is a consequence. You will not be as good as you're capable of being if you don't spend X amount of time with the ball. The more time you spend with the ball, formally or informally, is going to give you better understanding of the sport and improve your abilities. But I'm not going to be the guy that tells you you have to do it. I'm going to be telling you the guy that here's the pathway. You choose to take that path or not. And know that I'm going to support you either way and push you either way. But I'm not going to lie to you and tell you it's okay to be not training at home. I'm not going to be the guy that tells you shouldn't go play with another team or play in an additional training session or get on another indoor team. I'm not going to be that guy because we know outside of America, kids play soccer 4 hours a day, 7 days a week. They seem to be doing all right. They're not burning out.
The burnout is a whole nother conversation. I think I have a 9-year-old son, and will be 10 next month, and or next month in a few days and a few weeks, and he will. My biggest fear is his burnout, but at the same time, it's anything there's extra. It's do you want to go do this? It's not us forcing him to go.
Right.
It's unless he makes a team commitment, and it is up to him to make that decision. And we have the philosophy in our house. Our job is to f help foster our kids' dreams. We've lived our lives. We've went through our youth. We still have dreams as parents, but some of our priorities and dreams are now with our kids, and it's to help them foster their dreams. And I
Right.
think that's where living vicariously and versus helping fostering those relationships with those dreams are completely different. And Landon has a say. Do you want to go do you want to go take part in this camp? Yes, I do. Or do you want to go take part in this skills night? Yes, I do. And if we can afford it, we'll do it. If you want to have this private coach, do you want to work with this coach privately? Okay. And he has a say in it. We aren't dictating it. Every week before I said this past summer, before I set up his private session, I go, Landon, do you want to go work with with Coach Sonny? And the answer is yes or no. And 99% of the time, it's a yes. Even when he's sore and not wanting to play soccer, it's because he gets to go work with his coach and he gets to go work with this individual. It dealt nothing with the pressure from us. And we've gotten there and the coach has told us to go home because he's too tired. Or he's not, his ankle is sore and he should not be practicing. I mean, it's an hour drive over and an hour drive back, but we're trying to let him make the decisions and he have the conversation with the coach. Right. And before we run out of time, I always ask this question to everyone. Who has been your greatest influence as a player and now as a coach?
Oh, I loved Jorge Campos. I don't know if you know who that is, but he was a national team player for Mexico, and he's well known for being a goalie that wore very flamboyant uniforms in the early 90s. But he was also played as the nine for the Mexican national team. And as I was gravitating from a field player to goalkeeper, in high school, Jorge Campos was just so entertaining. How do you become a goalkeeper and you're the show? So Jorge Campos really left an influence on me that when you're on a soccer field, especially in the goal, you should have a presence and everyone should know you're on the field. Doesn't matter if you're not, if you're saving shots or not, people should know. So Jorge Campos. I would also categorize, I was, when we were training with that Ultra team that I mentioned beforehand, we were training in Mission Viejo, California, right outside of the 94 World Cup training grounds. And I distinctly remember Alexi Lalas, Kobe Jones, Eric Winalda, and Tony Miola, who I've met two out of those four as an adult and told them this story. It's pretty cool. But they came over and had a kick around with us for like 10, 15 minutes and just, we didn't even know who they were, right? And then the next summer, we're watching the World Cup and those are the four guys, right? They told us, we didn't really know. I was 13 years old, something like that. Anyway, so though I have to comment that those guys were very influential because there was personal contact there. Coaching is a whole nother mixed bag because I think that there's different parts of my career where I've had influence on from different people. My brother would be my first one. He's the one that really got me in and excited. And then my college coach, my final year, was my first mentor. I would literally take all of his training sessions and then run over and train my high school girls and run the same exact training session. That's how I learned how to teach defensive shape as a team, is I watched it from a goalie's perspective all in front of me. I had a little notepad. I wrote down the session and went over and then ran that session with my high school girls and became very successful at defending as a group. When I went and coached out in college, the head coach, Ammon Bennett, he would say that he hired me to do the soccer stuff, but he taught me a lot about managing players and talking to players and recruiting players and showed me kind of the ropes of the college game with the young adults. So he mentored me in another way. I've had some various coaches just within our community that have challenged me. And I would consider that those were very influential people, that they really challenged me on a day-to-day basis. They would question me out of respect to me, themselves in the game, and to kind of get me to be thinking. And then I mentioned Freddie and the coaching staff at the Monarchs. I just learned so much about the tactical side of the game and managing adults that have egos and all the, I mean, I observed more than I did in that environment. It was incredible. From a, I think from a, this is going to sound so cliche, but I'm just going to use one quote. Alex Ferguson was the big thing when I first started coaching. I would say that I've early stages, I learned a lot. I kind of mimicked a lot of the things that he would say because he was the main person that we talked about. But there was one quote that he said that has always resonated with me. He said, "I know 0.1% of soccer because soccer is constantly changing. So for me, for you guys to accuse me that I know everything about soccer is false." And what registered in my brain at that time, where I was having very good success in an early career with the club, club teams, was if he only knows 0.1%, I know like 0.00000001%. And it's always been since that moment, early 2000s, where I went, I just have to constantly be gaining more information and studying more ideas. So I would be willing to say that Alex Ferguson was kind of the first coach I acknowledged as leaving a really strong impact from the coaching standpoint. I would echo it also with there was a quote in a similar time where if you go back and watch those games, Ferguson would sit up in the bleachers with the players. And one of the players, I want to say it was Beckham, but I don't know if it was, said he did all the training. He did all the preparation in training and before the game. And we went out on the field, he trusted us to play and execute what we was taught. If he did not like what he was seeing, he would simply walk down the stairs, stand at the edge of the technical area, fold his arms, and give us the glare. He didn't have to tell us anything. He was not animated. He did not have to remind us. His presence alone was a trigger for us to get our crap together. You know better. You understand this game, go get it. And if you remember the beauty of Manchester United back in the day, and by the way, I'm not a Man U fan. I like underdogs. If you remember the beauty of them back in the day, they always won in stoppage time. And I would largely do that to player management. He also had quality players. And then the ability later in the games when it wasn't going the way they wanted it to, his presence alone was enough to impact the game. He did not have to yell. He did not have to instruct. He did not have to scream. Just had to be there. And they looked up to him in a way that I've taught you better, I expect better. And I think that that shaped who I think I am as a coach is definitely not Alex Ferguson on the soccer level, but trusting my players to go do what they've been taught. And then reflecting that if they're not doing what they've been taught, then that's on me. And I gotta reconsider how I'm introducing or teaching the game. Not get so upset that the players are not doing well, but reflect on my own ability to impact their growth and individually and collectively. And that's just stayed with me for a long, long time.
Hey everyone, I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. Jeff is great. I love our chats that we get to have every now and then. This chat was a great refresher for me as a parent. I hope you all have had a chance to digest what he had to say and really enjoy what he has to offer and say, and how much the word I'm looking for is optimistic. He is on the upcoming future of our soccer communities across this country. Even though he's in Utah and his club's in Utah, a lot of those same philosophies can be applied here. It's a huge change that will have to happen, but it can be done. And his knowledge is worth it because this man spends a lot of time studying this sport and self-educating himself on it. But if you take time to listen to what he says in this episode, and I'm going to link the podcast that is where this all started for me. And I hope you guys take a listen to that podcast episode.
Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.